Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell pledged yesterday morning that he would permit a free and open debate on immigration next month if the Dreamers issue has not been resolved by then. After a three-day-long shutdown, the Senate voted yesterday to advance a resolution that would fund the federal government for several weeks through February 8th. We're working through the details this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Mordecai Lee is a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. Mordecai, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for inviting me, Kate.
And Barry Burden is here as well, a political science professor and director of the Elections Research Center at UW-Madison. Barry, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, here we are, a new day and another continuing resolution, ultimately leading to the end of this partial government shutdown. Barry, help us dig into the details. Where did both sides come together?
Well, the issue holding up a lot of this in the Senate was DACA. And you might remember that DACA was an administrative decision made by President Obama 5 years ago.
Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals.
Exactly. And that was in place of the so-called DREAM Act that had been introduced in Congress but did not have success in getting passed. And so this administrative decision allowed for something like 700,000 to 800,000 young people who had been brought to the U.S. As children but were not citizens to remain in the country by paying a fee, meeting some requirements, and having a renewal every couple of years. They could work, they could stay in the U.S. President Trump decided in September that that was not an appropriate way to enact something like DACA through administrative action. He wanted Congress to move on it and produce a real piece of legislation, and so he decided to suspend DACA as of March, and that put a deadline in front of Congress to take some action. Meanwhile, we have a series of continuing resolutions to keep the government afloat without a real budget. And those two things have become entangled to the point where over the weekend, apparently, Democratic leader and the Republican leader in the Senate agreed that they would pass a stopgap measure to keep the government open for about three more weeks if the majority leader would agree to bring some sort of immigration debate to the floor in a pretty open way, should there not be another agreement on a DACA replacement in that time. So it's complicated, but those two things have gotten linked.
We've got this handshake agreement then over immigration. Government offices may be starting to open again, but that doesn't mean the debate is over. Mordecai, when is the next deadline? And are politicians already trying to dig in, position themselves to win the fight?
Well, Kate, you've really nailed it in the sense of the big victory that, you know, for the taxpayers, for us as citizens, was merely to delay keeping doing this for another 2.5 weeks. In one respect, I suppose we should be glad that the whole basic concept of American democracy, which is compromise, worked. In other words, the Republicans wanted to keep the government going. The Democrats wanted the kind of commitment to vote on DACA that Barry was talking about. And so there was a fair-to-fair compromise. Okay, you get a little bit, I get a little bit, let's move on. The problem, of course, is that in modern-day government, a compromise for 17 days doesn't help a lot, that we could be exactly back to where we were yesterday. And I'm hoping that this gives some breathing time for both moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats to say, we just can't keep doing that. Public administration is being destroyed under our eyes if we keep telling federal workers you can only count on working for 17 days. So I'm hoping this will be something of a turnaround.
Barry, the Progressive Change Campaign Committee issued a statement saying, quote, today's cave by Senate Democrats led by weak-kneed right-of-center Democrats is why people don't believe the Democratic Party stands for anything. Will this hinder Democrats' efforts to argue that they got concessions in this deal?
Well, that's some pretty tough language, and it's true that Minority Leader Schumer in the Senate did not get a lot in the deal. He got essentially a promise from Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, to have a debate on the floor. But his fellow Democrats in the Senate, who are further on the left in his party, people like Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, several of whom are potential presidential candidates in 2020, are pretty unhappy, as are progressives in the House. In fact, I think everyone in the House is unhappy, and both majority Republicans and Democrats there say they're not necessarily bound by this deal that was made in the Senate. And it's not clear if that agreement is going to solve the problem in the Senate, let alone the House.
We're discussing takeaways this hour on the partial government shutdown as President Trump signed a measure last night to reopen the federal government. Mordecai Lee is with us, a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. Barry Burden's here as well, a professor of political science and director of the Elections Research Center at UW-Madison. You can join in with your comments and questions about the partial government shutdown at 800-644-2124. You can also send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer laid the blame for the stalemate at the president's feet. And this is how the U.S. Senate's top Democrat characterized the clash.
The reason the Republican majority had such difficulty finding consensus is they could never get a firm grip on what the president of their party wanted to do. These days, you never know who to deal with when it comes to the Republicans. The Republican leaders told me to work out a deal with the White House. The White House said work it out with Republican leaders on the Hill. Separately, President Trump turned away from not one, but two bipartisan compromises. Each would have averted this shutdown.
Mordecai, let's begin with you. Is this how government is supposed to function? What do you take away from this finger-pointing?
Kate, I think besides the fact that this is not how government ought to function, I think the takeaway is the odd behavior by President Trump over the last 72 hours. By odd, I mean what we're used to is a guy who sort of gets up in the morning and does not feel obligated by what he tweeted yesterday. Today, he's sort of a tabula rasa, and he tweets a different position. One of the unusual things over this long weekend was the fact that President Trump did not speak very much, did not tweet very much, and seemed to be hanging on to his previously stated positions. In other words, he didn't feel free to change his positions. And the other thing that I found odd about President Trump's behavior is that he decided not to be the center of attention. This is a guy, besides being president, he likes being the center of attention. He says he's a deal maker, that he sold himself that way when he was a candidate. It seems to me that the deal that ended up being the compromise was something that was sort of pretty obvious from the moment that the shutdown started, yet he never used his office to convene people, to call people together, to suggest a compromise, to create the deal. It was a very passive behavior, and so that's what I think is so unusual after having a year of getting used to the Donald Trump as president.
Barry Burden, what do you make of what Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said?
Well, I think I agree with most of what Schumer said and everything that Mordecai said. It's really been strange behavior. Just 2 weeks ago, President Trump called an open meeting in the White House of both Democratic and Republican leaders and told them, I want you to work out a deal and I'll sign whatever you send me. And so they worked out a rough deal last week. People like Lindsey Graham and Dick Durbin in the Senate, they apparently brought it to Trump on Friday and he rejected it. And so that seemed to run against his earlier promise. And then as Mordecai said, the president was completely absent from the negotiations over the weekend. And that's just not how things have gone during previous shutdowns where there are active discussions happening and some shuttle diplomacy. He did cancel his trip to Florida. He remained in Washington, but we don't know what he was doing. It wasn't negotiating with members of Congress. So it's really unclear. I think the way Chuck Schumer put it yesterday or over the weekend was that it was like negotiating with Jell-O. You just don't know what the president's position is, what he's willing to accept, what he would sign.
President Trump declared victory, though, yesterday as the Senate reached a compromise to end the government shutdown that was in its third day. But Democrats said the fight over immigration is far from over. Senate Democrats came together with Republicans on a plan to fund government agencies through February 8th. The deal came with a promise from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to work toward a bipartisan compromise on immigration, on border security, and a broader budget outline before then. We're talking through what we know and what the future holds with Mordecai Lee, an urban planning professor at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. And Barry Burden is here, a political scientist at UW-Madison and director of the Elections Research Center. Your questions on how the government shutdown was resolved at 800-642-1234. Do you remember government shutdowns in the past? Do you agree with the Democrats' decision to back down on a deal on immigration legislation? Join in or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll return after a news update. Here's what we know. The federal government is now funded through February 8th, and funding for the popular Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, extends for 6 years. President Trump signed it last night. We're getting analysis on the morning show. Barry Burden is a professor of political science and director of the Elections Research Center at UW-Madison. And Mordecai Lee is with us, an urban planning professor at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. Your questions and reaction to this government shutdown at 800-642-1234. Do you blame one or both parties for the shutdown? Do you think shutdowns are indicative of larger problems within our government? Do you remember government shutdowns in the past? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said yesterday that he's ready for the government to get back to work. Here's part of what the Republicans said on the floor of the U.S. Senate.
I think if we've learned anything during this process, it's that a strategy to shut down the government over the issue of illegal immigration is something the American people didn't understand and would not have understood in the future.
Barry, do you think Democrats gave in any way because they saw voters balk at their choice to hold out on government funding for a DACA deal?
I don't think that's exactly what happened. There is some interesting contrast going on in the language used to describe the immigration issue. McConnell in that clip referred to illegal immigration. Republicans will also talk about chain migration, wanting to stop that practice. Or amnesty, particularly in the House. You're going to hear conservatives say they're against amnesty. Democrats, on the other hand, tend to talk about DACA and the DREAM Act and the DREAMers as a set of people. The American public in surveys is much more sympathetic to DREAMers, and something like 75 or 80% of Americans say in surveys that they would support something like the DREAM Act to give those folks the right to stay in the U.S. But language around illegal immigration and amnesty tends to turn people off. And so partly what you're having is a battle of rhetoric. I think the Democrats in the end went along with this because they got CHIP, which is something we haven't talked much about. This was a health care program for children that they cared very much about, was passed some years ago, and it's been on hiatus since it expired at the end of last year. And one concession they did get in this arrangement is a 6-year renewal. So that takes them at least through the end of the first Trump administration, and will be handled either by the second Trump administration or the president who follows him. So that was some reassurance. But other than that, mostly we've kicked everything down the road a couple of weeks to do this all again in early February.
Mordecai, there was bipartisan buy-in for CHIP. CHIP was wanted all along. Do you see that CHIP was innocent bystander of legislation in all of this? And what do you make of humanizing the DREAM Act, humanizing DACA?
You know, the thing about CHIP is that it indicates that sometimes there are Republicans who believe in government, who believe in public administration, and who believe in helping people. And so that's a perfect example. Kate, I'm so glad you're focusing on it. And so did Barry, that as a whole, in Congress, there's a kind of a central mainstream consensus that there are certain programs that are good ideas and that are sort of above the left-right ideology. And so the renewal of CHIP was an indication that Republicans will support human service programs that they agree with. And I think that's a good precedent to sort of bleed into DACA. You know, Barry had mentioned that there are a lot of illegal immigration issues, and an omnibus illegal immigration bill would be really controversial. But maybe the scenario we'll be looking at, you know, 14, 15 days from now, is going to be a longer CR, in other words, more than a month, maybe even through the end of the fiscal year, and a clean DACA bill. In other words, not deal with all the other stuff. Democrats could say they won. Republicans could say they won. There is support for DACA as opposed to the other aspects of illegal immigration. So that, from an old-fashioned perspective of mine about what a political compromise is, I think that's the compromise that's just staring people in the face. But modern-day Washington politics, gosh, who knows what's going to happen in 16 days?
Well, let's bring in John now from Madison. Hi, John.
Yeah, I think that there are a couple of things. First of all, we have not had a budget since earmarks have gone away and since the Hastert rule. And, you know, they were talking this morning that a Senate deal on DACA is not going to go through because a majority of the majority in the House will not allow a vote to come to the floor. So I think that those are two things that we really need to get, you know, taken care of so that people can actually negotiate a budget and actually get a budget, not just this whole, you know, continuing resolution to pass for the next 10 years.
Barry Burden, can you take this from John and Madison?
Yeah, John makes some really good points, and I think it's helpful for us just to remind ourselves how the budget process is supposed to work. And Mordecai alluded to that in his last comments. The new fiscal year began back on October 1. That was the deadline for the Congress to pass its appropriations bills, first a budget resolution and its spending bills, and to have those signed into law by the president. That process has not worked very well over the last 7 or 8 years, but we thought it would be improved in 2017 because we had unified Republican government, one party in control of both branches and both chambers of Congress, and people like Speaker Ryan in particular, who said they wanted to return to what's called regular order in the Congress, back to this traditional process of doing things in a timely fashion, meeting deadlines. But Congress was nowhere close to having its appropriations bills ready when October 1 hit, despite having unified party control. And that meant continuing resolution after continuing resolution to the last one that was signed last night, and there may be more. I think John's highlighted some of the things that make budget deals harder, not having earmark money to help grease the wheels and bring members on board and cut deals. The so-called Hastert rule, where you don't bring things to the floor of the House, at least, if the majority of the majority party isn't on board. That's a hard and fast rule, but it's been something that at least Republicans have abided by for the most part. I think Republicans are willing to look at both of those issues. President Trump, in that open meeting he had a couple of weeks ago, said he wanted to see earmarks come back, and there's been some discussion of those. So there may be some openings, but I do think we want to be careful not to claim too much success about what happened yesterday.
Mordecai, as a former state lawmaker, do you see earmarks as something that does grease the wheels, that keeps legislation flowing?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I remember when we were debating a state budget bill and we didn't have enough votes for it. I was in the majority party. And then all of a sudden, one of the leadership said to a member from, let's say, Southeast Wisconsin, well, what about if we finished widening that road you want us to finish widening? Bam, there was a vote. So Barry's right. That's the way you can put together sort of the final votes. But I'd like to go back to something else that John talked about in terms of the Hastert rule, because we have to remember that John Boehner a couple of times was willing to go against the Hastert rule. Now, he lost office eventually, but he went against it because he felt that the mainstream Republicans and the mainstream Democrats would pass a bill that was essential. So now let's fast forward. You're Paul Ryan. The Senate has passed both a budget and a DACA bill. Now the question is, will the majority of the Republican caucus in the House agree to go ahead with DACA? I think at that moment, Paul Ryan says, I'm not sure that I want to fight the 2018 fall elections over whether we Republicans are heartless about Dreamers. Maybe just like what Boehner did, I'll bring that one to the floor, and I know it'll pass with just mainstream Republicans and Democrats. Now, that might be the end of his speakership, but that's how you decide what the political agenda will or will not be. And I think that's possible. That's how things will unfold.
Barry, House Speaker Paul Ryan has been relatively noncommittal, though he did say on Face the Nation over the weekend that Republicans had been negotiating in good faith, quotes there, over DACA. Where do you see the House Speaker in these debates?
Well, I have a lot of sympathy for Speaker Ryan. It's just such a difficult job to try to hold together his conference in the House, negotiate with the Senate, and deal with the White House at the same time. It's just very challenging. He might very well do what Mordecai has suggested and try to bring DACA to the floor. It might pass with enough Republican and Democratic votes. There are going to be a lot of unhappy Republicans if that happens, though, and that might cost him the speakership. But there are also news stories over the last few weeks that maybe he's ready to be done being speaker after this election cycle. He is not committed necessarily to running for re-election and certainly not to serving as speaker again. So perhaps he'd be willing to put himself out there and give DACA a shot in the House, knowing that that would end his speakership, but that may be something that's in the works anyway.
You're with us on the morning show for this look back at the partial government shutdown the morning after, getting takeaways with Barry Burden, a professor of political science at UW-Madison, and Mordecai Lee, an urban planning professor at UW-Milwaukee. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with the Democrats' decision to back down on a deal on immigration legislation? What do you hope will happen with DACA in the coming weeks? Do you think lawmakers will reach a compromise? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Todd now, who joins us from Green Bay. Hi, Todd.
Hi, good morning. There was a memo, Jennifer, who I believe works for the Center for American Progress now, but she was a Clinton campaign spokesperson, I'm not sure her exact title, but anyway, she leaked, there was a matter that was regarding the importance.
And Todd, you're breaking up there. Todd was talking, I think, coming up with a funding formula for the border wall and what happens to the border wall in these negotiations. Mordecai, insights on that?
Well, I think if we look back at how the Democrats have been stating their positions, that increasingly they're saying that they can support a package that includes border security. Nancy Pelosi said that, I think it was last week. So in other words, Democrats are softening on that if Republicans will soften on what Democrats want. That's the classic compromise, political dynamics as it should be. You give a little, you get a little. So I think that Democrats are willing to fund something that includes what they call a border security package. They never want to say, we voted for the wall. But even the president's administration has been getting slightly softer on the wall, not that they have given up on building it. They certainly will build it, but that it doesn't have to be every single inch from San Diego down to the Gulf of Mexico, that they realize that that's an impractical solution. So I think maybe the political process is working a little bit more. Maybe there are compromises. So maybe indirectly what Todd is raising is, what are the internal politics of the two parties? In other words, when Barry referred to the base of the Democratic Party and the criticism of Democrats for compromising, for many years we've talked about the base of the Republicans, and now we're seeing the base of the Democrats. Would they accept a border wall in some fashion?
Barry, is the wall, the border wall, a work in progress?
It is. It's certainly an issue for a lot on Capitol Hill. Apparently, when Chuck Schumer met with Donald Trump on Friday in the White House, Schumer was willing to offer up money for the wall, at least a down payment of some billions of dollars. And Trump had apparently been open to that earlier in the week, but then rejected that deal later in the week. So the problem with negotiating with Jell-O is we just don't know what exactly the president's bright line is, what he's willing to accept. But I think this is an issue that stops a lot of Republicans in the House from supporting DACA. They want not just border security, but they really do want funding into some kind of physical wall and barrier system, maybe with, you know, other technological enhancements. You know, the other issue we haven't talked about that is linked here as well, especially for Republicans, are the budget caps on defense spending. A number of them, including Paul Ryan, have said that they don't want to move forward with another budget agreement if there are going to continue to be caps on military spending. And that's a real priority for them. But it just gets complicated as you get deeper into the conversation and want to move beyond just a continuing resolution for a few days or weeks. You get the wall and border security, defense spending, and other issues tangled up in that.
Barry, take a look back at previous government shutdowns, the most recent one, 2013. This one was a much shorter one, especially in comparison to 2013, that ran for 16 days. What do we know about the effects of this one that just happened?
Well, I think there are a number of effects to look at. One is the effect on the economy. Another is an effect on the functioning of the government itself. And then third is the political effect down the road on the 2018 elections. This shutdown will be different than those previous shutdowns, I think, on every dimension. One, it was relatively short. Just over the weekend, a lot of government wasn't functioning anyway. So I think the impact on the efficiency of government is probably not very big. The other difference is this is a shutdown that happened amid unified government with Republicans in control of all three institutions. All of the previous shutdowns were during times of divided government, where a president of one party and at least one chamber of the Congress controlled by another disagreed about some fundamental issues. In 2013, it was the Affordable Care Act. In 1995, 1996, it was about government spending in general and passage of the budget in late 95. So that's a more traditional path. And then voters have to decide when the next election rolls around, who do we blame? Is it the person in the White House for holding things up, or is it members of Congress? And that's a difficult task because you've got divided authority and different parties involved. This time around, it's a little different. With one party in control, it's easier to see who's in charge of things, and yet Democrats deserve some of the blame because they do have a role in the Senate and deny Republicans the ability to move ahead if they don't have 60 votes. So I think this one will be felt differently. By the time we get to the 2018 elections, I think a lot will have happened between now and then. And so it's hard to see this particular episode mattering very much then.
The deal reached after a bipartisan group of senators pushed their leaders to come to terms enables hundreds of thousands of federal employees who had been facing furloughs to go back to work today. We're talking about takeaways from the partial government shutdown. Barry Burden, a professor of political science at UW-Madison, is with us. Mordecai Lee, an urban planning professor at UW-Milwaukee and a former state lawmaker. Your thoughts are welcome as well at 800-642-1234. Back after this news. The vote in the Senate was lopsided. 81 senators voted to end the government shutdown, while 18 sided against the measure. That would be two Republicans and the rest of the Democrats and an independent who caucuses with them. In the House, the vote was 266 to 150, with about three quarters of Democrats opposed. We're examining takeaways from the partial government shutdown with Mordecai Lee of UW-Milwaukee and Barry Burden of UW-Madison, getting your reflections as well at 800-642-1234. Who is to blame for what just happened? Do you think government shutdowns are indicative of larger fundamental problems in our political system, or are these situations unique, one-offs? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Mordecai, where we left off the conversation with Barry Burden, he was describing this three-pronged approach when you look at the impact of a government shutdown, the economic impact, the government efficiency impact, and then there's the impact on the 2018 midterm election implications. Which one of these three are you watching most closely?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's so hard to tell what will be important in the long run. I think he described it accurately. Probably what's going on in the background is that Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, had said before that, not about this shutdown, but about previous shutdowns, that shutdowns hurt the Republican brand. In other words, it was bad government. It made them look bad. It hurt people. People would remember. Now, he never said it this time around, but I suspect that he still feels that way. You know, peeling back one more layer, sort of our American culture, we as Americans, somewhere deep in our political DNA, we hate government. We think government is a bad thing, except when we benefit from government. So you might have a voter who says, well, I hate government, three cheers for the shutdown, as long as my Social Security check keeps flowing or my Medicare payments keep flowing. There's always a but when it comes to this sort of generalized dislike of government. So I suspect that had the shutdown gone on longer, had more people been affected, there would have been a crystallization of public opinion. I suspect that it would have gone against Republicans more than Democrats, but, geez, with American voters, who knows?
Barry Burden, how might the implications of this partial government shutdown, how might it come to bear in the president's State of the Union address, which is coming up, or in Davos, Switzerland?
Yeah, the State of the Union address, I think, was one factor in this agreement in the Senate. It doesn't get mentioned much. But I think that Republicans would not have liked to have shown up to hear the president later this month without the government running. And so that may have put some pressure on them to speed up the deal and to set the next deadline for February 8th, which is conveniently after the State of the Union address. I doubt that the shutdown itself will get mentioned much in the State of the Union speech. But if there's not already a deal on DACA, or in fact if there is, President Trump will mention it. He has said before repeatedly that he's in favor of renewing DACA through the legislative process, believes there's widespread agreement in both parties in Congress, and wants to see it get done. So he's likely to call on Congress to make this happen. He will also call for other things, though, that complicate the process, more spending for the border wall and security, reducing the caps on defense spending, which I mentioned before. And so I think what is unclear is whether we're going to get a clean DACA vote that will be separate from these other issues, or whether Republicans are going to force them to be connected. And that very much drives the process and will determine how this affects the elections this fall.
Let's bring in Rick now, who joins us from Milwaukee. Hi, Rick.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, we're sitting here talking about the border wall, and for some reason in politics, we don't use common sense government anymore. Everyone's talking about the border wall. You have one side that wants it, the other that don't. But we're not addressing the big issue is trying to stop the companies from hiring people that aren't qualified legal to work in the United States. Why is that not coming up? Why are either side not bringing that issue up?
Mordecai, go ahead.
Well, Rick has pointed to one of the important components of a comprehensive immigration bill, and that's would there be more sanctions and more enforcement against employers who hire illegals. And, you know, occasionally we hear stories about that there are raids against employers and they find illegal employees and there are penalties to the employers. Apparently it's a kind of a de facto, below-the-surface, invisible economy that there are businesses who depend on illegals because they can't find legals to do it. And importantly, that includes the dairy business here in Wisconsin. It's tough work. It requires being there every day. It requires consistently giving quality service to the animals. So I suspect that employers are going to want to be at the table when it comes to negotiating, especially the dairy farmers. And so whether you're Senator Baldwin, a Democrat, or Senator Johnson, a Republican, if you're going to be voting on a comprehensive immigration bill, I am sure that they're going to be talking about the milk industry.
Mordecai, Barry was touching on the State of the Union address. Do you anticipate, with midterm elections, also the implications of the State of the Union address, how that might play into perhaps another continuing resolution or a government spending deal?
Well, there's no doubt that everything in Washington is political in the sense that they're always gauging how will this affect the next election.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about how are Republicans positioning themselves for the next election, when it comes to their base, in other words, sort of the Trump voters of the Republican Party, they're comfortable. They won't be primaried. Nobody can get to their right. They'll be safe with the positions they're taking now. But when it comes to the general election, there are some states that are still flip states, and Wisconsin is one of those flip states. We're a deep purple state. And so if you're wanting to help the Republican Party in Wisconsin, you're not sure you want to have a hard right base position. And so the State of the Union becomes the platform for a president to state for his party what is the general theme that we want for the next 6 months and then going into the election. And I suspect that it's not so much a combative showdown, but it's a much more conciliatory. There are lots of things we agree on. Yes, we want to hold down taxes, but yes, we want government to operate. We want the faith of the confidence of citizens that we know how to run the government. So I suspect that it might be a softer tone than some of the speeches he's given.
Barry Burden, you're head of the Elections Research Center here at UW-Madison. Do you think the State of the Union will set a tone for what is to come and unfold in the coming months ahead of the 2018 midterms?
That's what it's supposed to do. It has traditionally been a place where a president outlines his budget priorities, sets an agenda for the coming year, tells the Congress what he would like them to do, and has an opportunity to talk directly to the American public in an unfiltered way about his vision for the country. You know, the budget part of that is going to be lost this time around because it's not the beginning of the next budget season, which would be due by October 1, but we're in the middle of these continuing resolutions keeping the government open. I do think Republicans would like to talk about something besides President Trump in the elections, if that's the deciding factor, whether you're for him or against him. Republicans will be in trouble. That's because President Trump's approval ratings are low. They're lower than they should be, given the state of the economy and some other things that are moving in a positive direction. And so to have a debate about DACA or CHIP or something else, I think, is going to be more productive for them. And I think they would also, frankly, like some things like transportation spending that they can bring back to the district and claim some credit for and try to separate themselves from Washington in a way. So all of that, I think, is possible. It'll be part of the State of the Union. But, again, there's just so much time between now and then and the way news has been proceeding over the past year or so. There are going to be a million things that happen in between.
Mordecai, Vince emailed and said, I disagree with you. Most Americans don't overwhelmingly hate government. We probably wish it were more nimble, but we genuinely respect government activities. Do you see that point of view?
Well, I certainly see that point of view. I'm certainly glad to have somebody disagree with me. But I think there is that underlying tone in America of being hostile to government. And yes, Vince is right that there are some people who recognize the importance of government. But politics often turns on the negative rather than on the positive. Probably it's a fair generalization, a rough generalization to say that the Democratic Party is sort of the pro-government party, whereas the Republican Party is ever so vaguely the anti-government party. But nonetheless, it's really hard to discern the direction of public opinion. I really like Barry's point about if the election is a referendum on President Trump, then that's a losing stance for the Republican candidates. And it's so hard to predict how things will unravel. You know, sometimes on some days President Trump is soft and warm and fuzzy, and on other days he just undermines what he said the day before and he contradicts what the Republican position is. So it's so hard to guess how it'll unfold. But I'll tell you what, the optimist in me says that I really hope that Vince is right and that more Americans are pro-government than anti-government.
Barry Burton, as we start to wrap up here, perhaps the optimist in you, what will you be watching most closely going forward?
I think this tension that Mordecai has identified between the centrists in Congress who are willing to work in good faith on some of these issues, particularly DACA, but also a longer-term budget deal, versus the instincts and I think incentives in the Congress to separate the parties and have them coordinate around their leaders and operate in a more polarized way. That broke down somewhat in the Senate over the last few days, where we saw a coalition of somewhere between 5 and 10 senators make this deal. That's much harder to do in the House, which is more hierarchical and orderly and rigid. It's going to be partly a matter of whether the leaders in both chambers are willing to let those moderates come forward and take some control over the process.
Well, Barry and Mordecai, thank you for tag teaming on this. Mordecai Lee is a professor of urban planning at UW-Milwaukee, former state lawmaker. Barry Burton is a political science professor and director of the Elections Research Center at UW-Madison, offering their insights on the outcome of the latest government shutdown. This hour was produced by Keely Boltina, Brianne Shasso, Colleen Leahy, and Nyasia Ellison. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.